Welcome back to another edition of the ASEP Equal Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Dr. Jason Woods. Today's discussion is part of the Sepsis Wave 2 webinar series, and we'll focus on antibiotics in sepsis. We have Dr. Lauren Epstein, who is a medical officer in the Division of Healthcare Quality Promotion at the CDC, and has done most of her recent work specializing in the epidemiology of sepsis as well as antibiotic stewardship that is related to sepsis. Those are the topics that she's going to jump in with us today on. And first up, we're going to ask her to tell us a little bit about the public health implications of antibiotic stewardship. Now, I will give one heads up because this was a pre-recorded lecture that then I'm adding some commentary on from Dr. Epstein. And I started trying to jump in every time she had a great point or there was really an emphasis that was needed. And I found that I was needing to do that multiple times per minute of this podcast. There is so much jammed in here. So I'm going to largely try to stay out of the way and let Dr. Epstein work her magic.
So more than half of all hospitalized patients receive an antibiotic drug during their hospitalization. But we think somewhere between 20 and 50% of all antibiotics in U.S. acute care hospitals are either unnecessary or inappropriate. And the ED actually has a very important role to play in improving prescribing of antibiotics. There are about four antibiotics that make up approximately 45% of all antibiotic treatment in patient settings: vancomycin, piperacillin, tazobactam, ceftriaxone, and levofloxacin. So what is antibiotic stewardship? There's not one strategy to stewardship. It's really an effort to measure antibiotic prescribing, to improve antibiotic prescribing so that antibiotics are only prescribed and used when needed, minimize misdiagnosis or delayed diagnosis leading to the underuse of antibiotics, and also to ensure that patients are receiving the right drug dose.
Let's go ahead and hammer that home, because I don't think that many people think of under-prescribing antibiotics as part of antibiotic stewardship, but really we're trying to target the right drug to the right patient at the right time without over- or under-prescribing these.
The bottom line is that stewardship is fundamentally about patient safety and delivering high-quality healthcare. So why is stewardship needed? Antibiotics are generally well-tolerated medications in the setting of other complexities in medical care and in comparison to other medications like chemotherapy. And I think most providers feel very comfortable giving antibiotics since they are very frequently used in the hospital and they're easy to explain to patients and loved ones about the role of antibiotics. And a lot of times it can be difficult to stop antibiotics if a patient is doing well or if a patient is doing poorly. But I think one of the things that we really have to remember is, as in all medications that we use, are risk and benefits. And we have to remember that when we're using antibiotics, and remember that it's very important to use them appropriately in order to keep our patients safe. Antibiotic resistance is one of the most pressing public health threats of our time, and unnecessary and inappropriate antibiotics contribute to the spread of antibiotic resistance. CDC estimates that 2 million illnesses and nearly 23,000 deaths are caused by antibiotic-resistant infections each year in the U.S. And antibiotic-resistant infections cost an estimated $20 billion in excess direct healthcare costs annually. This is a very significant public health issue. So antibiotic stewardship should really be viewed as a patient initiative in the hospital, and I'll talk a little bit more about this. And there's lots of reasons for this, and one is that antibiotic adverse effects can be severe. And one of the examples that people know about is C. diff, and there's also other life-threatening allergic reactions that people can have. Other issues are antibiotic adverse events can lead to ER visits. One in 1,000 antibiotic prescription leads to an ER visit for an adverse event, and 200,000 leading to 200,000 estimated ER visits per year in the U.S. Antibiotics can also have long-term consequences, including disruption of the microbiome, which can affect chronic disease or promote antibiotic resistance. So I want to point out that it's important to note that stewardship is not intended to replace clinical decisions, and it really provides infrastructure within a facility to help providers choose appropriate antibiotics and facilitate rapid administration of antibiotics when clinically needed, like in the case of sepsis. So I think it's very helpful to compare stewardship with infection control programs, which are both focused on patient safety, and many providers are already familiar with infection control programs. Infection control programs are designed to create an optimal environment and protocols within the hospital to prevent infections and keep patients safe. So we're thinking specifically about central line. An infection control team may not determine who gets a central line or an indication for a central line, but it helps to ensure that central lines are placed in sterile environments and maintained appropriately to keep patients safe. And similarly, stewardship programs may not determine a clinical diagnosis, but instead help clinicians choose the best antibiotic for the patient and ensure that it is administered appropriately.
I love the way this is stated. It's not taking away clinical judgment or needing to evaluate the patient in front of you. In fact, all of these guidelines and protocols and attempts at stewardship rely on the clinician to still be a good doctor to the patient in front of them. And instead, these help reduce unnecessary variation, or when it's unclear which direction to go, they can provide some guidance based on best evidence.
So thinking about stewardship as it relates to public health, our goal is that every patient gets optimal antibiotic treatment, meaning that they get antibiotics only when needed and when indicated, and they get the right antibiotic at the right dose and for the right duration. Antibiotic stewardship interventions benefit everyone by leading to improved individual patient outcomes, reduced burden of antibiotic resistance, saved healthcare dollars, and ultimately designed to keep patients safe. In order to accomplish these goals, we would like to see every provider and healthcare facility incorporate stewardship into their practice. The ED clearly has a role in stewardship. And because the ED is often where we diagnose sepsis and serious infections, and it's the starting point for empiric antibiotic therapy, and most antibiotic therapy in the ER is empiric. It's critical for obtaining cultures, such as blood cultures, prior to treatment that will later be used by the inpatient team for tailoring antibiotic therapy, and I can't stress how important this is for the treatment of the patient. I think there's a lot of unique challenges to the ED when it comes to stewardship. It's hard to maybe capture all of the ED clinicians. Someone is always working or sleeping, either before or after shift. There's often a need for quick decision-making, so we know that time is of the essence for a patient with sepsis. You know, we talk a lot about inpatient antibiotic stewardship, but also there is now a focus on outpatient antibiotic stewardship, where the ER can plays an important role, and lack of follow-up with patients leading to ED and lack of primary care or specialty follow-up for patients is a consideration when they're on antibiotics.
I appreciate Dr. Epstein's understanding of where the ED fits into this entire process, being that we are often the front lines. We are seeing large volumes of patients. We start therapy that others frequently will continue without changes, and we are often a place where you have to treat empirically without culture results or further molecular diagnosis. And I feel like frequently when we talk about antibiotic stewardship, those difficulties are not very well understood, or at least it's not clear that they've been taken into account.
So how can stewardship be integrated in ED? I think the most important thing is engaging the ED as the first stop in inpatient care. This is key. Having an ED clinician sit on the hospital antibiotic stewardship program, leveraging the ED pharmacist. Less than 5% of EDs have a dedicated pharmacist. But for those of you that do, this is a great champion and advocate for stewardship and a
Shout
great
out to
resource.
All of our ED pharmacists out there. Y'all have saved my butt more times than I can count, and I want to make sure you know you're appreciated.
So I'm going to switch gears a little bit and talk about how stewardship and sepsis treatment align, especially, again, focusing on ED. We recognize that sepsis is challenging to diagnose and treat because there's no specific pathogen or clinical test to confirm sepsis. And the lack of sepsis diagnostic specificity and the importance of initiating early antibiotic therapy likely contributes to inappropriate broad-spectrum use of antibiotics. Pathogen is not identified in many cases of sepsis and septic shock, and viral infections likely contribute to a significant amount of sepsis. I think another difficult thing is that sepsis can often mimic other acute conditions, which also creates challenges for diagnosis and treatment. Since there's no gold standard for sepsis, and clinicians don't even agree on what constitutes sepsis, and I point out the study that was conducted in 2016 by Rhee et al. That looked at 5 cases of patients with suspected or confirmed infection and possible organ dysfunction, meaning sepsis. They surveyed 94 academic intensivists and found that there was very low inter-rater agreement among intensivists, who are generally all considered to be experts in sepsis care. So how is it possible to practice stewardship in sepsis given these challenges, especially in ED? Frontline healthcare providers are important for preventing antibiotic resistance. Broad-spectrum antibiotic use is often the most important initial regimen for life-threatening infection. Ensuring the most appropriate empiric treatment is a major focus of stewardship, as well as ensuring that antibiotics are tailored appropriately after they are started, are both components of stewardship. So how does ED contribute? It is imperative that antibiotics are started early, especially in patients where sepsis or septic shock is suspected, and antibiotic and source control are the backbone of sepsis treatment. But among patients with infections that don't have signs of sepsis, further testing can be performed prior to the initiation of antibiotics. And this includes getting a true history of drug allergies from a patient or family or medical records and making sure appropriate tests are performed to localize the source of the infection, including cultures if needed that can guide in patient management. If you are doing a culture or a test and the patient may have an unusual chronic disease or be immunosuppressed and you have questions about what tests can be ordered, utilizing specialties that may be available to you, either asking infectious disease or other specialties if there are important tests that need to be ordered in the ER when a procedure is being done. Other things to keep in mind, and I think this is really important, is the initial choice of an antibiotic in the ED is arguably the most important dose that the patient
This just warms my heart. I cannot think of very many times in the ED where we are referred to as the most important.
So patients that are admitted with a serious infection, antibiotic selection should be based on suspected infection source, host factors, and prior antibiotic exposures. Second, the antibiotic choice in the ED has significant influence on what therapies continue in the inpatient setting, and this represents an important opportunity for stewardship and collaboration with other specialties. I should point out that I'm actually not an ED physician. I'm an infectious disease doctor, so I'm looking at this from the viewpoint of somebody that's actually seeing patients after the ER and ED, and it does really matter what the ED starts, and it does actually very much contribute to what's continued in the hospital. And finally, the ED plays an important role in obtaining cultures prior to initiation of antibiotics that allows for tailoring of antibiotic therapy during hospitalization. So getting those cultures or if you have access to rapid diagnostic tests, making sure that those are done are very important for helping to figure out what the source of the infection is. Just a couple things about specimen collection. I think these are a few things to remember. That if you are, wound swabs are discouraged since they usually have insufficient material for gram stain and culture. But if you do have to get a swab, be sure that quantity is adequate for both culture and gram stain. Remember not to culture superficial wounds or sinus drainage, since these generally correlate poorly with deep cultures. And if you are getting stool cultures, remember that you don't have to get multiple specimens per day, and that form stools in general should not be submitted. And there's more information about specimen collection actually on the CDC website. So last, I want to switch gears just a little bit and talk about public health and sepsis prevention identification activities, which is an important focus at CDC. When patients with sepsis present to ED, it's usually at the point where they have an infection or sepsis. But we know that there are a lot of things that are happening prior to the patient presenting to ED, which can determine whether they get an infection that leads to sepsis, including their susceptibility to infections and pathogens that they are exposed to. And this is just a schematic showing that all the different underlying host susceptibilities and possible pathogens that can all contribute to sepsis. Some of the questions from a public health perspective that have come up are, who's developing sepsis or infections that lead to sepsis on a population level? How many people are getting sepsis each year in the United States and how many are dying? How can CDC work to improve education for healthcare providers, patients, and caregivers about sepsis? And how can research, including microbiome disruption, patient skin or nasal disinfection, improve management of medical devices, et cetera, contribute to sepsis prevention? And these are all questions that we're thinking about. In August 2016, CDC published the Vital Signs, which is a public health alert focusing on sepsis, in order to raise awareness of the importance of prevention of sepsis and causes of sepsis. And based on analysis, we learned that most people with sepsis had infections that started in the community prior to hospitalization and had an underlying illness that required frequent medical visits. So we think that there are opportunities for prevention of infections that lead to sepsis. I just also want to highlight that later in 2017, CDC will be launching a national education effort to raise awareness about sepsis identification and prevention among both healthcare providers.
And lastly, we asked Dr. Epstein to discuss a little bit on length of antibiotics and the recent pushes to both decrease and extend length of antibiotics, depending on the illness that we're talking about, and where she thinks that pendulum is going to land, as well as what kind of data we need.
I think there's more evidence coming out that really, you know, once you find and achieve source control, you can really reduce the time, the duration of antibiotics. I think there's a lot of infections that we're not sure how long to treat, but it looks like we're finding that over time that the duration of antibiotics, the shorter duration is as effective. I'm thinking about the study that came out, I think, a couple years ago about abdominal infections and source control. I think one of the things I think about is that, especially from the ER, when you do prescribe patients antibiotics, you know, they go home, you don't really know if they don't follow up with a primary care doctor, if they feel better, and they get a long course of antibiotics and they kind of have it sitting around. You don't know the next time they don't feel good if they're going to just take those antibiotics. You don't really know what people are going to do with them, which isn't kind of what we want them to be doing. And in the hospital, I think when people have infections, we're really, one of the things that we're really trying to do every day is when we see a patient is evaluate, does this patient really need an antibiotic? Have we established source control? Is this antibiotic really needed? And just evaluating that every day. And we really have the luxury of doing that in the hospital because we're seeing the patient every day. But I think as more information is coming out, it does look like shorter courses for, at least for some infections, are as effective as longer courses.
There is just so much goodness crammed into that lecture. Dr. Epstein was amazing. To try to summarize some of it, there is no one definition of what antibiotic stewardship is, but it does include some standard components: measuring antibiotic prescribing and usage, improved antibiotic usage so that they are only used when they are needed, avoiding missed or delayed diagnosis that leads to underutilization of antibiotics, and when a patient does get antibiotics, assuring that the correct dose and duration are part of it. Separately, the ED plays a massive role in any antibiotic stewardship program, should be critically integrated into any effort. It's the first place in the hospital where many of the antibiotics are started. We have to choose the antibiotic based on infection and likely source, as well as the local antibiotogram. And those decisions have lasting effects through the entire hospital course, as well as any outpatient stay. So we really need to think very carefully about all of these decisions. This has been the ACEP Equal Podcast. Thank you so much for listening today. You can find all of the rest of our podcasts at the Academic Life in Emergency Medicine blog, www.aliem.com, or through the ALIEM podcast feed. I'm Jason Woods. You can find me on Twitter at jwoodsmd. You can email me at jasonwoodsmd@gmail.com, or you can find the rest of my work at littlebigmed.com. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you for the next ACEP Equal Podcast.